Welcome. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week for your listening pleasure. We have two guests coming on today. The first, of course, is the indomitable, beyond an era, Lisa Ehr, who has lived through a number of eras, including those of many protests since back in the 60s, and now here she is leading protests herself. Lisa, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Vinnie.
Can we just start off by talking about Kiwis Connect? I think, speaking of Kiwis Connect, Penny should be online any minute, AFR, so if you just keep watching her little Skype thingy, she should be online soon. About Kiwis Connect, because you're holding a demo for democracy this Sunday. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, it's quite exciting because it's nationwide, Vinnie. We've got 12 centres that where we've got marches or rallies, something happening, The idea behind it is really, when we looked at the whole situation, what's happening financially, I mean, it affects the whole world, but we're really talking about New Zealand here because we're a small place and we can affect change here. The corporatization of everything. Everything is operated around finance, money, big business, small groups of people getting extremely rich. And so when we looked at that, we thought, we've got to make the connections here. We've got to draw the dots between, for example, the food, huge agribusiness, putting in genetic engineering around the world, which we haven't done yet in New Zealand, fortunately, and mining. I mean, they're wanting to mine beautiful places in New Zealand for oil and sand and coal, and do we need this? Are there not now alternative technologies? You can look at the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, which is coming up in New Zealand. Vinnie, have you done anything on your shows about the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement?
A little bit. Now, we've got Penny calling in now. AFR, would you be able to ring her and add her into the conversation, please? That would be really nice. Because, I think the Trans-Pacific Partnership, I relate it to the European Economic Community that happened a number of decades ago. And what happened there essentially was it was the setup of a powerful multi-state government using trade as the hook. You know, come in here, sign this trade deal, and all of your money woes will go away. When instead, with the new currency and everything, it's only made Europe even more prone to economic collapse. And now they have a European Parliament which passes an awful lot of laws that people just don't want, with like unelected representatives putting the legislation in.
Well, yes, that's true. I mean, it's all about big money, but the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement is really about American trade dominance of the whole Pacific Rim. So there's about 11 countries involved in this, and a lot of Americans are not happy about it. And there are people now in Congress who have started making a noise and saying, hey, why is this so secret? Why are we not finding out the text of what's going on? So I believe that there are talks going on in Brunei as we speak. And in our New Zealand professor, Jane Kelsey, she's over there, so we'll find out. She'll be on a plane, unfortunately, flying back on September the 1st when we have our demonstrations. But quite honestly, there's some really insidious things in there, one of them being what's called investor states disputes clauses. Now, if New Zealand signs up to the TPPA and signs up for these investor states disputes clauses, it means that the multinational companies can take our government to court should we perhaps put any law in that might affect their profit. So if we suddenly in New Zealand, as environmentalists, suddenly say, we don't want any fracking here, we want a law that outlaws fracking, then the companies that are operating here or have any sort of deal to come in will say, well, this is going to cost us money. We will sue you for, let's say, 30 years projected loss of profit. And that will be paid.
And then we'll be fracked.
Yeah, we'll absolutely be fracked, Vinny. So, you know, our government with 4 million people can't possibly pay the sort of projected amounts of money that these companies will be asking for. And there are incidences in Ecuador where some of these trade agreements and things have been suing small countries like that already. So there's some insanity going on here.
I believe, and it might have been Ecuador or Bolivia, they've recently outlawed McDonald's because it's not fit for human consumption. Jamie Oliver proved it in the US court. Now, we have Penny Bright joining us now. Welcome to the show, Penny.
Oh, hi, Vinny. Sorry about that. Gremlins.
Yeah, the old digital gremlins, they can be rather frustrating, especially if you feed them after midnight. Now, speaking of burning the midnight oil, we're talking here about the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, and I was wondering what your take is on all of this, Penny.
Well, I've actually attended two Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement negotiations as a stakeholder. Twice now, managed to get in, dreadful thing about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, I mean, it's an investors' treaty, but it's the secrecy and the lack of transparency at the highest levels when signing such an investors' treaty would have such a massive impact on New Zealanders and our rights, and we're not allowed to know about it. And, I mean, you compare that with the massive violations of our civil liberties and intrusions on the lives of ordinary people, our rights to privacy, like with the GCSB Act, which has just been railroaded through, and yet this absolute lack of transparency and accountability at the highest levels. Well, how does that work when the will of the people is supposed to be the authority of government? Well, where's that bit come in?
Somebody told me at the TPPA march that the TPPA treaty is going to be good, except for the part that benefits the Americans. And I said to him, okay, do you know what's in it? And he's like, well, no. And I say, that's because it's secret, okay? When was the last time you swallowed a pill that said it was a supplement and the ingredients were totally secret and maybe parts of it were poison, like cyanide or whatever? Would you still take that pill? Because it doesn't matter what part of the TPPA you swallow the whole pill.
Well, the fact of the matter is that what is good for big business isn't usually good for the majority of us. And the reality is this whole neoliberal Rogernomics model has been... It was actually based on an absolute rotten of fraud that public is bad, private is good. Well, I mean, we've had about 30 years now, and surely it's time to actually check the mantra against the facts. And, I mean, like at local government level, for example, all this contracting out of services that used to be provided in-house, I just ask people one question. Have your rates gone up or down? Game set match, because if it was all so efficient, well, wouldn't your rates go down? And same at central government level. I mean, with all this, all these consultants and private contractors everywhere through all these different services provided at central and local government, where is the money going and who is benefiting? Are you getting better services? Are the services cheaper? No. Well, it's time to roll back Rogernomics. It's time to roll back this neoliberal model. It's time to take our towns, our cities, our regions and our country back from corporate control. And so full credit for Lisa and the Awareness Party for kicking off this you know, the Kiwis Connect marches and rallies that are happening all over New Zealand coming up this Saturday. Really encourage people to get out there, and I mean, Lisa can give more details, but it's a great initiative, and it's about time.
Thank you, Penny. I agree with everything that you've said there. I mean, not just about I'm talking about community and the local government. we should have far more participation from the masses, but everybody's switched off because everything's coming from the top down, so people think that they can't affect any change, so they switch off. Whereas what we need to do is we need to reclaim people power and get people involved from the local government level and groups of people that feed into local government, and then local government should be feeding into central government. But we've been trying to get Auckland City GE free, and Amy Adams, National MP, came out and said, oh no, we want central government to make those sorts of decisions. That's not for local government. Basically, she's trying to put us with local government being just for roads, rates and rubbish. But it can be so much more.
Well, of course. It occurs to me that all they're really interested in collecting our taxes for is to railroad us and give us rubbish as a result.
Well, the reality is that, especially in Auckland, under this super city, super rip-off that was forced upon us back on the 1st of November 2010, and some of us, and you were there at the beginning, Vinny, when we set up the Stop the Super City. When, I mean, some of us, like Lisa and Lisa Prager and myself, we were there from day one when we gate crashed the meeting of the bad mayors, the four bad mayors who wanted to help railroad through the super city legislation and against the ARC. And we said, you've got no lawful right to do this, because where is the rule of law in all of this? The rule of law being, under the Local Government Act, Section 24, Schedule 3, Subsection 49, there had to be a binding vote of electors before you amalgamated and brought together councils. We, the public, were supposed to have a say on it. And because central government knew that we weren't going to wear it, they railroaded through the super city legislation. And just to clear up a few facts here, the facts are that it was under Labor that they were, under Helen Clark's government, they wanted to push through the super city, and it was a petition that I got Peter Sharples to present, I think it was back in about November, December 2006, which the Greens and the Māori Party supported, that there'd be no legislative change to the governance of the Auckland region until the public had a chance to participate. And what happened was that helped to throw a spanner in the works. And then what happened was we had the Royal Commission on Auckland Regional Governance, which sort of slowed up the process for about 18 months. But the reality is that then, as tends to happen, you know, one government starts something, the other one helps to finish it, then the super city legislation was railroaded through. Now, what was made was a big deal about Rodney Hyde was the main one responsible. Well, actually, no, he wasn't, actually. He just sort of finished it off. But the reality
just a frontman.
Well, the reality is that the most significant recommendation of the Royal Commission for Auckland Regional Governance was the CCO model being used, and that was their recommendation, their most important one. And I did a whole lot of research, and what I found out was that nobody had ever done any form of cost-benefit analysis on the cost-effectiveness of the CCO model. And I checked with the Department of Internal Affairs. They had never done one. None of the eight councils in the Auckland region had ever done a cost-benefit analysis of CCOs. Neither had the Office of the Auditor General. And to cap it off, I have in my possession a letter with a Treasury, from Treasury with their letterhead up the top, saying that they had never done a cost-benefit analysis. You've got to ask yourself, where is the due diligence when if you want to put 75% of Auckland regional rates into the CCO model when nobody's ever sharpened their pencils and actually double-checked that that's a cost-effective way of spending ratepayers' money? It's outrageous.
Indeed. Indeed. 75, I believe I mentioned this to John Banks at a meeting out in West Auckland, said that 75% of the council business being done by these CCOs that have never had a cost-benefit analysis does not benefit the 100% of Aucklanders who never got a say about whether or not they want this to govern their city. And he says to me, that sounds like a speech from Penny Bright. And what I should have said there is that sounds like a response from a weaseling scumbag politician who doesn't want to answer a straight fracking question. We'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Lisa Eyre from the Awareness Party, the organiser of the Demo for Democracy, and Penny Bright from waterpressure.wordpress.com are my very special guests. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week for your listening pleasure. And my very special guests are Penny Bright, how long have you been a hardcore activist? Like, basically since the Springbok tour, maybe a little earlier. She's officially listed by the State Intelligence Services on the list of subversives, so it's a good fit for the show. And Lisa Eyre, the creator of Lisa's Hummus, which is like nice or all organic and everything like that. And you told me one time that there's copious quantities of hoops you have to jump through, red tape and stuff of that nature that's involved with food preparation and having any kind of sizable business in this country, which, to my mind, just kind of thinks to me like, that means that anybody who's just an ordinary bloke with a really good idea and so on and so forth, unless he's willing to jump through all of that and go through all the rigmarole, he won't even bother setting up his own independent, non-slavery type business. That's the problem with this country.
It's getting more difficult, Vinny. It wasn't so bad when I did it, because, I mean, I just started in my kitchen with no capital. But now it's much more difficult. The food bill, which is another of these harmonizing sort of laws to harmonize everything with U.S. laws and this whole Pacific Rim, will make it much harder for people because the costs, the compliance costs are so high. In my day, it wasn't so expensive to do all the, to jump through all the hoops. When you're starting also, nothing, you know, and you haven't got any money, you can't pay, you know, $200 here, you know, $1,000 there. You haven't got the money.
So just on that, a bit of my background, people probably don't know much about, is that I'm actually a tradesperson. I have advanced trade in sheet metal engineering. I was New Zealand's first ticketed woman weld inspector, and I was a quality assurance coordinator for a stainless steel fabricator. So I actually know quite a bit about stainless steel and the dairy industry because I was a welding tutor for 9 years at Monaco Tech, and my specialty area was gas tungsten arc welding, TIG welding, of stainless tube for what was the New Zealand Dairy Welding Standard 4703. And of course, with all this Fonterra kerfuffle that's been happening, I mean, I was very, very interested into what caused this dirty pipe. Because in 1997, I got the award at the New Zealand Institute of Welding Conference. I was the only woman. And my paper, which was how to avoid welding defects in gas tungsten arc welding of stainless steel, got the award for the best technical paper. So I know a bit about this subject, and I was regarded as an expert. So I was just really interested to know, well, what caused this dirty pipe? And now, of course, the news is that they got it all wrong in the first place. But I did a bit of SWOT, and I discovered to my horror that the New Zealand 4703 dairy welding standard for stainless steel tube is no more. That in April 2011, it got transmogrified and swallowed up by a joint Australian-New Zealand standard. And basically, in terms of training, it seems that technical institutes don't actually train in this area. And because I have a quality assurance background, I know that the training of people to be able to do the job in a proper way is absolutely pivotal. So that really, really concerns me. So what I was considering doing was to make my expertise available to the four separate inquiries that were supposed to be happening into the into this Fonterra debacle, because there's a big difference between quality assurance and quality control. And it seems to me that these inquiries are all focused on the quality control. Or how long, how come it took so long to find out when a this mistake happened? Quality assurance is to stop the mistake happening in the first place. And was there a bug trap as a result of a welding defect in this, because it will be stainless steel pipe, was that the root cause? And is it because the fitters on the job out at the Fonterra plant have not been properly trained? Are they contract fitters? Are they in-house fitters? Do they know what they're doing? I mean, these are serious and practical questions, and it seems that nobody else is asking them. So,
Penny, I'm not even aware what this Fonterra debacle that you're actually alluding to actually is.
Well, this thing that's caused a big dent in New Zealand's international reputation, the fact that there was a scare about this botulism, and were Fonterra milk products, particularly for infants, safe to drink? It's a big deal. And, of course, what happened was there was this big scare and this big recall, but because they understood that it was caused by this botulism. And now what they're saying was, oh, sorry, folks, false alarm. There wasn't actually this botulism in the first place. And meanwhile, we've had all this major panic. We've had countries that, you know, have been blocking Fonterra imports. I mean, what a pig's breakfast. But, I mean, so...
I was under the impression that the melanine scandal was actually deliberately put into baby powder, and it was signed off by a Fonterra exec and just said, "Yeah, let's just put this in."
Well, I mean,
that was the previous.
That was not this current debacle.
So it's happened again.
well, this is the thing, you know. It's important that you do things in a proper way, you know. And if you do take common sense, due diligence, and make sure that you have proper plans and organisation in place, and then you have your quality control checks along the way to make sure that your overarching plan is actually being implemented, that's how you debug the job and make sure everything goes smoothly. It comes down to quality assurance, and that's the same with the GCSB. If anybody, that's the Government Security Communications Bureau, and if anyone has bothered to read the Rebecca Kitteridge report into the state of the GCSB, you would see, oh my God, what a pig's breakfast. I mean, a very covert organisation that deals with information, and it doesn't even have a proper information management system in place. And the devil's always in the detail, but when you bother to read this stuff, and given that I do have a quality assurance background, I just think, good God, as you would say, Vinny, you couldn't make this blank, blank up. But that's it. You know, like, it all comes down to quality assurance, having proper systems and organisations in place. Well, the GCSB is a pig's breakfast, and it's still not sorted. And I mean,
It depends what you're actually trying to achieve, because it appears to me as though the GCSB director, who you know, is responsible for spying on all New Zealanders, gets appointed by the Prime Minister, and then they approve the warrants with the Prime Minister's say-so. So it just appears like a Stasi Gestapo headed by Mein Führer, you know, basically.
It's very dodgy, but I mean, I've done a couple of things. I mean, because I thought that I might be one of the 88 New Zealanders unlawfully spied upon, I contacted the Office of the Prime Minister and I said, okay, what's the process? To whom do I make a complaint? How do I find out whether or not I'm one of the 88 New Zealanders? And I was told from the Office of the Prime Minister to contact info at GCSB, contact the GCSB directly, because I thought, well, I contacted the Office of the Prime Minister, because the Prime Minister's in charge. I thought, oh, well, I'll muck around. Well, do I go straight to the Prime Minister? No. So then I find out that the Office of the Prime Minister has given me an incorrect email, because it bounced back. So then I contacted the Department of the Prime Minister and Cabinet. Now, a lot of people don't know that these are two quite separate roles and they have quite separate functions. The Office of the Prime Minister, where the Chief of Staff, Wayne Eagleson, he's the bloke in charge there, it's basically like a party political side where they're supposed to cover the Prime Minister's national party butt, as it were, and they're not supposed to be the ones that answer Official Information Act requests. It's not the Office of the Prime Minister that's supposed to give the impartial advice. That is the job of the Department of the Prime Minister and Cabinet. But here you don't have proper systems in place. It appears that people don't know their jobs, and that you've got this Wayne Eagleson, Chief of Staff, who is involving himself in a whole range of issues where, in my considered opinion, he should butt out because it's not part of his job description. And so, anyway, cut long story short, what happened was the Department of the Prime Minister and Cabinet, they gave me the correct email for the GCSB, so I made a privacy complaint, and I want, you know, and I asked the GCSB directly, so I followed the due process as outlined. Well, a month later, I go around in a big fat circle, then I get the official reply, we can't confirm or deny. So what was the point?
Well, that's a confirmation of sorts.
Well, but the thing is this, that, so I am not the only person. Apparently they were flooded with complaints or privacy complaints from people who thought they might be one of the 88 New Zealanders unlawfully spied upon. That process had not been completed in terms of the follow-through. I made a complaint to the Privacy Commissioner, and they are actively investigating my complaint. But because they've got bugger-all staff anyway, and the fact is that they have even less staff, because any staff from the Privacy Commissioner dealing with the GCSB must have security clearance, that narrows the number of people who can be involved. So before this GCSB bill was railroaded through Parliament, the complaints from people who thought they might have been one of the 88 New Zealanders involved hadn't finished going through a proper investigation. And guess what? The Rebecca Kitteridge report, which outlined a whole stack of systemic failures by the GCSB, she came up with 80 recommendations to tidy themselves up, and 76 the GCSB was directly responsible for. Well, guess what? As of the 30th of June, Director Ian Fletcher admitted, and it's on the GCSB's own website, that only 25 of the 76 Kitteridge recommendations had been implemented. So here's a brainy idea. We've got this intelligence service dealing with information. It's proven to be an absolute pig's breakfast. They haven't yet got their house in order. I know. Let's give them even more power.
Brilliant. Yeah, so that we can have a whole bunch of paranoid people who can violate everybody's privacy. Now, I'm also conscious of the fact that Lisa won't be with us for the full 2 hours. She's got a lot of thing on, and we're kind of taking up a lot of the talk time. Lisa, your take?
Well, I was going back to the milk powder that we were talking about. There's another aspect to that. Before you get to the stainless steel pipes, we had a big drought here in New Zealand over summer, and the farmers started importing feed. And the feed that they've been importing has had genetically engineered ingredients, probably soy.
Palm kernel.
Sorry?
Palm kernel.
Yes, but that's not genetically engineered. The thing wrong with that is that it's destroying the rainforest in Indonesia. But the genetically engineered ingredients, they are, of course, unbalanced. They don't work with the whole system of nature. So if you've got cows eating this and pooing this, it upsets the bacteria balance. And there are some vets in New Zealand who believe that the botulism scare, and it wasn't actually botulism itself, it was a bacteria that could cause botulism, that scare could have been caused by the imbalance of bacteria caused by feeding the cows genetically engineered food. So that's another thing that will have to be investigated, because they have come out in public, even though we haven't heard it on loud mainstream media, it is there. And this is part of New Zealand trying to have a clean green image. And then what happens is they import genetically engineered stuff from the US and bring it here and bring that imbalance into our natural system. So I'm quite up in arms about that aspect of it, as well as being very aware of the stainless steel aspect too, Penny. So I want to go back and just say, we talked about the events in New Zealand this Sunday, Kiwis Connect for a Positive Future. The website is kiwisconnect.org.nz. kiwisconnect.org.nz. And we've actually got a page there on transparency too, which refers to the things that Penny was talking about, and a page there on surveillance. But that's probably not quite as updated as I would like, but I seem to run out of time to do everything.
Yeah, it does happen that way, and we'll be coming to a break soon. And I find it very ironic that people are concerned about transparency in this country and claiming that there is none, the Prime Minister is not being transparent. I disagree. I see right through them. And the difficulty becomes, though, is that, as you were talking about earlier when we were speaking before Penny arrived, it's about awakening the masses. You can't do that unless you've got the mass media telling the truth, and they're just not doing it. They seem to be very cozy, very comfortable, doing their little crosscuts, glancing over issues, and not going in depth to the information that truly matters. Instead of letting the activists speak, they sum it up for them. It's not good. We'll be right back after the break.
Come gather around, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times they are
welcome back.
Changing.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the show that puts the harmonica in harmonizing. And isn't it interesting when they do all these laws like the food bill and what have you, how in trying to harmonize, they actually just wind up harming. It's quite hilarious like that. Now, Lisa Eyre from kiwisconnect.org.nz, you have a number of protests going off over the country. I think it's about 12 different locations, and we want to spend this segment just going over that and the reasons why people want to turn up and exactly where they're supposed to turn up to this Sunday. Go ahead.
Well, it's a demo for democracy. Democracy is not alive and well in New Zealand. We have a government that pushes through legislation that is not fully discussed. I'm speechless, really, about what's been happening. Everything's pushed through under urgency, and I firmly believe that the underlying reason for a lot of this stuff is the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement and the corporatization of the world. So our rallies this Sunday, slightly varying times, Kerikeri has gather at Kerikeri Domain, bring a picnic, there will be speakers and a time for you to have your say. Whangarei, Cameron Street, gather at 2 p.m. for a 2:30 march. Auckland, gather at Queen Elizabeth Square, which is at Britomart, at 2 p.m. for a march at 2:30. Walk to Albert Park via Wellesley Street and Princes Street, and gather at the Band Rotunda for speeches and some music. And Waiheke, you are joining us in Auckland. We thought about getting something going in Waiheke, but it's not there yet. And Hamilton, details are coming soon, but Hamilton, there is something in the pipeline. Tauranga, gather at the waterfront at 2 p.m., then march to Red Square. That's an interesting place to march to. Gisborne. Now, Gisborne are being very individual, and they decided that there's not many people in downtown Gisborne on Sunday, so they're going to do it on Monday. come together on Custom Street opposite the police station by the big Tanifar on September the 2nd at 2 p.m. with a planned departure at 2:30. Palmerston North, gather at the square in Palmerston North at 2 p.m. You'll be walking round the square. Wellington, Cuba Street, Bucket Fountain at 2 p.m. and march to the Beehive. Nelson, join in solidarity at the Cathedral Church steps for a sit-in at 2 p.m. Tarkaka, Golden Bay, 2 p.m. at the Tarkaka Town Centre. Christchurch, 2:30 p.m. gather at Latimer Square. Then you'll march west on Worcester past the damaged cathedral and go around the... enter the CCC lobby and exit on Hereford Street. I'm telling you this in case you're late and missed them at Latimer Square. March east through the Restart Mall, left on Madras Street and into Cardboard Transitional Cathedral for afternoon tea, and then back to Latimer Square for speeches. And Queenstown, there's a gathering at 2 p.m. lakefront at the Memorial Gate. So, and I'm hoping to have something in Napier. If there's anybody listening that would be prepared to host something in Napier, please let me know. But we've got a fantastic group of people, really, and we've also got a Facebook page. If you go Kiwis Connect on Facebook, Kiwis Connect for a Positive Future. And one of the things that we're doing in the rallies, if you're not holding a banner, you can bring pots and pans and bang the pots and pans, because we've got a number of people who are marching for different reasons. You see, all these connected reasons people could yell about, and that might upset somebody else. So if you've got pots and pans to bang, then it actually takes away the conversation and just makes the point. So we've got the government, how professional corporate lobbying denies us of our democratic voice, the TPPA, banks and incredibly unequal wealth, the media, we need the truth, food, seeds and pesticides and GMOs, the control of our food system, mining, corporate interests over local interest, climate, fossil fuel pollution and environmental issues, health, big pharma controls, fluoride, it doesn't just affect the teeth, education, privatising bulk funding charter schools, justice and prisons, they're being privatised, and on a more international thing, arms industry is promoting war, keep New Zealand nuclear free, and we will have a nuclear free banner for sure at Auckland. So all the, and there's other issues too, all those issues, we're coming together. So that's why it's a better idea to have pots and pans to bang or whistles to blow. If you're holding a banner, you can blow a whistle for winner whistleblowers like Bradley Manning and Edward Snowden. Because,
and they'll be the first people to be targeted and arrested. But yes, go ahead.
I don't think anybody should be arrested because it's supposed to be a peaceful protest. It's Father's Day. We want people to take fathers to take their kids and kids to take their fathers. So we don't want any sort of dramas on this occasion. It's not appropriate with children there.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that that we'll get a good turnout. And also I'd like to open the door to any people that can't go to there is a march in Auckland against the West's involvement in Syria. But if you can't go on the Saturday one, come with us, because this is all part of the overall financial agenda that's going on in the world, the dominance of the West. So it's appropriate to join us as well.
Mm-hmm. And indeed, Penny, you can shed some light on the Syria situation, because when a lot of people, I said this over the break, is when a lot of people talk to me about Syria and the bad things that are going on over there, I just go, are you serious? And they go, yes, I am serious. And I go, oh, that's so sad.
Well, the fact of the matter is, I mean, I remember really clearly back in 2003, I think it was about February, when we had a big march against the impending unlawful invasion of Iraq. And the reason given for this coalition of the killing, because remember, this never went through the United Nations. There was no international rule of law that applied to this unlawful invasion of Iraq, was because Saddam Hussein was supposed to have had weapons of mass destruction. And then it comes out, oh, actually, there weren't any. Meanwhile, I mean, all this concern about, oh, you know, the poor civilians being harmed by these weapons of mass destruction. Well, I put it to you that when you've got an invasion of a country, you've got military running around killing people, bombs dropping and all the rest of it, civilians get killed by unlawful wars. And it's just the same as all this hoo-ha about people in Syria who are supposed to have been poisoned. All we've seen on TV are some unwell-looking people. I have yet to see any medical certificates signed by independent doctors of death certificates. They died because of chemical poisoning, nerve gas or whatever. And that's the first thing. Seek truth from facts. I want to see lab reports that prove what was the substance that killed any of them, if, in fact, people did die of this. The other thing is, the secondary question is, well, even if people did die from chemical poisoning or nerve gas or whatever, the question is, who did it? And I cannot believe this massive rush to judgment at 30,000... Well, I can't believe it because it's been done before, actually. I take that back. That, oh, we're now going to invade Syria because of some dodgy thing said by some dodgy people, and the whole international rule of law, the whole basic principle of seeking truth from facts, we'll just let all that fly out the window, and here we go again. Well, nah, that's not okay. So that's why at 12 noon, I'm going to be at Aotea Square in Auckland. A demonstration has been called against this impending war on Syria, even though I can only be there half an hour because I've got another radio interview with somebody else at 1 o'clock. But the fact of the matter is, this is not okay. And our government needs to be held to task, that we have to demand as citizens that our government carry out the international rule of law regarding any form of invasion of other people's countries. That's not okay. You can defend yourself if you are attacked. But to go in and attack another country on this bogus basis that apparently some people have died or been made ill because of chemical attacks when there's no proof to back that up, this is just not okay, folks. Wakey, wakey, don't fall for a game.
What if you financed a rebel group or something of that nature in lieu of invading them in order to stoke up a whole bunch of tensions to give you the pretext and the excuse for invading them, Penny? Is that okay under international law? Because the CIA has apparently been doing that for decades and decades.
They certainly have, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're coming up to break now. We've got one more hour. I don't know how long. Lisa, are you able to stay with us for another segment? We've got another 17 minutes.
I'll be for half an hour, yeah. I'm okay for an hour, yeah.
All right, excellent. Okay, we'll be back soon, ladies and gentlemen. And Penny kind of says this point quite a lot, but it's always correct because the truth never changes. Seek truth from facts. You don't seek truth from rumour. You don't seek truth from speculation. You don't seek truth from bribing politicians. You don't seek truth from surveilling and making the people afraid. You seek it from facts. And unfortunately, the media in this country are not doing that job very well. In fact, they haven't been doing it for a number of decades. We'll be right back.